The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And do you recognize these names? Pete Dunne, Trent Seven, Tyler Bate. They're all signed to WWE UK. They're the lads, and they're performing with NXT and all over the world. And all three of them are right here on Talk is Jericho today as we discuss WWE UK. We recorded this in Birmingham, England, when Fozzy toured a few months ago. Actually, I went and saw Metallica right after I was in Birmingham. And I did have some technical difficulties with the recording. I'm not perfect, guys. I apologize. Pete and Trent sound amazing. Tyler and I were on the same channel, and basically, I don't think I plugged in the mic all the way, so I apologize. Still a great interview, three great guys. That's why we might sound a little different. My apologies to Tyler Bate. He's kind of a quiet guy anyways, so I wasn't trying to overemphasize that, but things happen. This is episode 448 of Talk is Jericho, and I think I've had sound problems maybe five or six times, so I apologize, but it's still a great conversation. You'll be able to hear it. Three up-and-comers in the United States, but they've been wrestling for years and years and years in the UK, and I think you're going to enjoy it. You'll hear all about British wrestling in the Indies in the UK, how it went from dead as a doornail in the 2000s to one of the hottest scenes over the last few years. Pete, Tyler, and Trent talk about the WWE UK tournament that ultimately got them signed to WWE, what William Regal did for their careers, what they hope to achieve in the States, and of course, their favorite matches. They're also talking about Mustache Mountain, Backyard Wrestling, the Butlins Camps, Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll, and Ben Shamrock. What? Let's get to it. It's WWE UK featuring the lads right here on Talk is Jericho.
So it's a pretty rare when I get three handsome youngsters in my hotel room.
But they're here.
And they're all from Birmingham, maybe? It's Trent Seven, it's Pete Dunne, it's Tyler Bate. Don't call him Bates. Nah. It's just Bate, right?
What were you on the other one?
Spelt my name wrong on the...
Tyler Bear?
Yeah, they spelled my name Tyler Bear.
Tyler Bear?
Yeah.
Like, as in naked?
That's better than Pete Dune. I get that all the time.
Pete Dune.
So that was when... is that what they spelled it wrong on the WWE?
It was like the little roll call thing that we got for the tour.
Was it the UK tournament or whatever it was?
No, it was for the UK.
For the tour, the upcoming tour now, like next week, yeah.
And like I said, we're jumping right in here, and I've met you guys a few times, but not a lot. And my research level on this show is zero. So explain that you guys, all three of you guys, are signed to the WWE UK deal, right? Is that correct?
Well, we're signed to the WWE.
Yeah. And we get to still do the indies.
However, we get to still do the independents as well.
So how did that all come about? Like, how did that whole thing work? Well, there is a huge boom in the UK for wrestling, actually worldwide, but more specifically in the UK, right? And all you guys were top names in that.
I mean, I think, like, you know, without blowing smoke, it's a kind of a genius move, really, on their part, you know, between Regal and Trips and whoever, and Canyon Seaman, whoever thought it up, because we had like a little retainer thing that came through after when we signed to do the tournament. And then it kind of just evolved from there, but by allowing us to still do the independents and things like Progress, Fight Club Pro, ICW, things like that, that kind of, that's boomed the house massively on like the independents here, mm-hmm. yet keeps us super relevant by letting us do NXT and these guys did TakeOver and all that kind of stuff. So it's just batting us between the two markets is just, you know, so it's doing super well.
They have WWE contracts.
Yeah.
But within those contracts, you're still allowed to work over here.
Yeah, select companies, yeah.
Wow, and it's interesting because I don't know if you guys were involved in this, but it's classic Vince where, was it World of Sport? There was rumors of it starting up, was it ITV, right?
Mm.
And that was, of course, the famous World of Sport from like the 70s, and it was the big show. And then, of course, Vince comes in and is like, well, I don't really want that to happen, so signs up the best guys, including Jim Ross. And now that's kind of not happening anymore, right? The World of Sport thing?
Yeah, it sounds like it's fallen on the wayside.
It sounds like it's still in the air, though, from what I've heard.
Yeah, some people are still, I don't know whether they're...
Well, some people are still hoping that it might kick off again and...
But I think even before that, there's been talk of like, there's been rumours for years of like a WWE UK thing, isn't there? Like, yeah. Whether it be a performance centre over here or yeah, something right. like that. So I don't know if that probably affected the timing. I don't really know, but it worked out great for us. So.
Talking about a worldwide thing is always somewhat having offices in Japan or England or wherever it is across the world, right? Well, so that's been great, though, and this started a year ago, maybe, for you guys, or 6 months ago?
January, wasn't it?
Well, the tryout we had was last November.
The very start of everything was the tryout, wasn't it? Which was exactly a year ago this week.
This weekend, yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
Wow, that is very cool, yeah.
And we were in Glasgow for the 2 days for Raw and SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And that was where we did our tryout, and then everything kind of just like snowballed on from there. So now there's a Tyler Bear toy.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second. Let me just check to see if this is working. So what's the Tyler Bear toy?
There's a UK title. There's a replica, and there's a kid's toy belt, and there's an action figure of me now.
Oh yeah,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Like actually, just in England, or is it like?
I'm not sure. I think it is a.
I'm sure it'll be a worldwide thing.
Yeah, I think it's like a limited edition sort of.
Okay.
Figure to see how.
It's only available in Birmingham.
Yeah. Only available one Toys R Us.
Yeah. No, when I first met you guys, I remember vividly meeting you. And were you there as well?
Yeah.
Right. So you guys had a tryout. When was that? Was that last year?
Exactly a year ago this year.
We had a match that was like a pre-show match. Not like before even the fans came in.
We were just completely thrown into the deep end. I think we hadn't even met anybody on the roster yet. We just had a tryout. And then our tryout ended as the roster arrived. And then Regal said, can you two do a match? Go get changed. Okay, so we ran down to the ring. When we came back, the whole roster, including Triple H, was around the ring, including yourself. Yeah. So it's like, if there's ever a chance to try and get a job, it's now, right? So must have gone well.
Now, you guys, all three of you guys have known each other for a while? Or?
Yeah.
Just from being on the scene, right?
Mm. Yeah, we're all like really local to each other as well.
So. Okay, so you're like all three of you guys from Birmingham?
Yeah, well, I'm literally, he's about 10 miles outside and I'm about 15.
Okay.
So he's from Dudley, I'm from Wolverhampton, and
I'm from like 5 minutes from here.
So that's cool. So you guys kind of came in through the scene together.
Yeah.
And then here you are all getting signed by the WWE together, which is very cool. But I want to talk about that day because that is very, like they do that sometimes where they'll just have guys or girls just having matches for, you know, like a Scott Armstrong or whoever. But whoever's around, like, you know, might stick around and watch and see. Was it intimidating for you guys to have that?
It was a bit, but like we've worked together 1,000 times, so it is. Uh-huh. Easy for us.
Yeah, I think when the wrestling side of things for us, like I'm 23, but I've done it 11 years now. I'm going into my 11th year, so I feel like the wrestling side of it is wrestling, doesn't matter where. But I think the initial thing where we walked over was a little bit intimidating because, like I say, we hadn't met anyone and we were just thrown in at the deep end. But once you start wrestling, it just felt like time to work. Yeah,
people, yeah. Or one person, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, and then I remember you guys came over and asked me what I thought. Right? Did I give you any good advice or anything? Or did I say, fuck off? Or... don't talk to me, don't look at me in the eye.
No, I think, like, you said you enjoyed it.
I think we walked over and it was you and Triple H together, and we asked you both. And I think he was busy doing whatever, you know, it was TV. But you said, hang on there, and I'll come talk to you in about 10 minutes. We just had a good chat for 5 or 10 minutes before we went, yeah.
Yeah, I just remember your mustache.
Yeah.
Because that was you. Were you the other mustache guy? Yeah. Because you have it on your shirt there. What was the gimmick?
We were just wrestling as like just singles wrestlers for our home promotion. And we were like, and then we both started just for some reason growing a mustache at around about the same time. And we're like, there's something here. What should we be called? I don't know, man. Like, what's cool? What's funny? Let's just pretend we're from Mustache Mountain. Okay, then let's do that. And then we just. It's right there on the log cabin.
I think part of the gimmick, though, was Tyler was about 13 at the time with a massive mustache.
Grew a mustache at 16.
Wow.
Had it ever since.
And you just kept it ever since. Now, here's the funny thing that you mentioned, Pete, when you guys talk about all English wrestlers seem to start when they're like six. So how old were you when you started?
I was 12.
12, yeah. How old was you?
Well, I'm a little bit different. Oh. I started like backyarding and stuff when I was about 20.
Okay.
And then like anything remotely serious, I was 28.
So that's your ancient British wrestling
scene. Yeah. So I'm archaic.
So how does that even work? Like, are you guys actually having matches at that age?
I was, yeah. I mean, loose term, calling it a match, but yeah, I was trying, yeah.
But you're in front of people and promoters are, you know, even if they're not paying you, they are promoting a show with you guys on.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you have to sign, like, a release? Or do they even care?
No.
I think
by the time Tyler got into it, it was slightly better. But when I got into it, there was absolutely no rules, regulations, anything. There was nobody policing anything. I was driving all the way to Kent, which was like 4 hours, but there was no room in the car, so I'd be like lying across where everyone's feet were in the car.
Uh-huh.
So
just at the bottom.
Because you were 13.
Yeah, well, I was small enough to just fit there.
You wore a mask.
Oh yeah, I was called Tiger Kid. Put me in a mask. As if then people wouldn't know I was a child.
That's Tiger Kid.
Working for years.
Yeah. It's a little
all the way from
old.
Japan. Now living in Birmingham at 12 years old.
Now residing in Birmingham. So you started, you said, at 28. What did you do before, and why did you take so long to get into it?
Always loved it, and like I say, like backyarded and stuff like that.
What was your backyard name?
Ben Shamrock.
Ben Shamrock.
Yeah. Okay. It's good. Yeah, and then it kind of just fell apart. Like, you know, you just grow up, and like all of my mates moved away. Some moved to Australia, and everyone went and got jobs and stuff like that. So it's like, oh, okay, we'll just jump into the real world. So I went and worked for like sales and marketing and like doing all that kind of stuff, having like real jobs and like looking after like restaurants and opening nightclubs and things like that. And then the British wrestling scene was pretty dire mid-2000s, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it, yeah.
The shows that we used to go to were just... they were just so bad. I mean, you could see people were having a go, but there was just no real...
There was no buzz,
nothing was cool. No one was, like, really, like, you know, copying anything that was relevant. Do you know what I mean? Like, you had the best era of wrestling on you know, from the WWE or WWF that had ever been produced, and then you go to your local leisure centre and it's just this fat guy dressed like Kiss, and I'm like, what?
Well, there were actually tribute shows, so yeah. I remember going to shows where there was UK Undertaker, and there was somebody dressed as X-Pac and Road Warriors. So that
I was in Hamburg in 93, there was a guy called Johnny South. He used to wrestle as the Legend of Doom. The same shoulder pads, the same hair. He was just some guy from, like, you know, Brummy or whatever, but he was the Legend of Doom.
Yeah. The Legend of Doom.
Go and see all of the tributes. But would they try and pass them off as the real guy?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
To the kids, yeah. Like, I mean, the parents were like, oh,
the kid. I like went to the Butlins camps and all that, and I saw a fight pain, and it was just like, it's not.
You know it, right?
He's 5'10".
Yeah.
I think the worst one was the fake Stone Cold. He was like the least badass you've ever seen. Even as like a little kid, I was like, no, that's not right. That's not him.
What was his name?
Probably just Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, I don't even know. I'm pretty sure they probably just tried to pass it off. I know they had Mankind wrestling as Mankind.
Wow.
And they had a Dudley Boy. That was what he was called, the Dudley Boy. But he was just like a skinny 5'8" guy, you know.
With a bit of tape around the middle of the glove.
Well, all he had was camo trousers, and that was enough. Yeah.
And a painting table. Yeah. Decorated
that would
table.
That would kill the business. That's basically what you say was happening at that point.
Yeah, it did. It got really, really grim.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
All right, Pete Dunne, Trent Seven, and Tyler Bate were talking about how bad the UK wrestling scene was in the early 2000s. So, guys, what turned it around?
Okay, so from these kind of shows, me and a friend got together and we were like, man, this is pretty grim. Why don't we try and like start something ourselves? And funnily enough, around about exactly the same time, these guys over like between Birmingham and Cardiff were kind of like doing the same thing with Attack Wrestling. And we started it. Attack Pro Wrestling. So we kind of like started the same thing in Wolverhampton where we were like, come on, man, let's take the cool stuff from Japan where they're chopping each other in the strong style and stuff, and let's take like the cool little storylines and let's see if we can make something work. Like, we started wrestling this like little scout hut with like 40 people there, not really knowing what to do. And then like we had like when big shows would happen, like we'd like try and like grab some like indie guys to like come and train us and stuff like that and do seminars. Then we did a couple of them, and then things just started to escalate. And then now I'm here. We moved venue once to this like dingy nightclub that was amazing for a little period of time, and then we moved to this other little warehouse. And now we're at this massive warehouse that's got incredible production. We're signed to the WWE, so everyone knows exactly what's going on. And that was kind of like my little rise. So it's very different to someone like yours. I mean, he's probably had what? How many thousands of matches?
I couldn't even count. I think that's what helped is we were so under the radar. You could have terrible matches and no one would ever. It wouldn't go anywhere. So over the years and years, there's a lot of people like me doing that, and the scene got better and better. So when finally imports started coming in from America and Japan and whatnot, people were ready to go. They'd put their reps in, and they were already good. But we just wanted to start our own companies because every company was a tribute show, or, and it's not a knock on the guys, but like All Star doing Butlins, it's just not the kind of wrestling we wanted to do. We wanted to wrestle like they did in Japan or in the States.
Yeah.
So we just started our own companies. I'm 16, 17 years old, I was running my own shows because there just wasn't any shows around. So we're drawing 50 to 100 people, but we were getting to wrestle how we wanted to and experiment and learn.
Same thing that the Hardys did with the Omega.
Yeah, really similar.
Just starting their own little...
Well, I was more influenced by backyard wrestling I was seeing for the most part, because in Britain you'd see backyard wrestlers going out and doing, you know, crazy high spots and trying to be creative. But then whenever I'd go to what was supposed to be pro wrestling, there was just no creativity there. It wasn't what I saw wrestling to be. Yeah. Right? So it just... And we weren't in touch at the time, but their path was similar to mine.
Yeah.
We just started running our own stuff and trying to make it different.
Guys too, like besides yourselves, that you start hearing about like Will Ospreay and mm-hmm. Zack Sabre Jr. and now Marty Scurll. Like, were all those guys kind of in your gang too?
Actually, all different scenes really. I know Will was a backyard guy and he spent most of his time there. I guess he only really came around the time Progress started, so maybe four or five years. So it's not as...
Yeah, around about 2012-ish, yeah.
And that's for Marty. He's been around for ages. He would have been doing the Butlins camps and stuff like that, I'd say. So it was all parts of different scenes, but over the time, I think things like Progress starting up really helped.
Progress.
It consolidated, yeah.
Yeah.
In central London, they were the first people to really go, let's try running a cool venue, a punk rock venue in the centre of London. It sort of consolidated all of the top talent, I guess, into one place, and I think that helped start the rise.
Cool type of a vibe, right?
Yeah.
Because you heard about Progress, you heard about Preston City Wrestling. What's the one in Glasgow that does the
ICW? Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, there's a real big scene going on over here, which is amazing.
Well, now we're wrestling what, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's most weeks I seem to have one day off. That might be a travel day, especially in between the WWE stuff they have us doing, which, going back to when I first started wrestling, it was maybe once every 2 or 3 months, you know?
So just by being signed in the WWE and the way that the scene is happening, it gives you guys that much more work.
And you know what? It's not just... I think that's helped promoters realize they can make money and sell out shows even on a weekday. But there's a lot of guys like CCK, who we're friends with, their tag team. They're wrestling this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all through the weekend. They've had one day off, you know? Yeah, and that's been the last 2 or 3 weeks in a row.
That's great.
And they're like independent shows,
completely
not
independent,
like
yeah.
Town shows or...
And all of them are aimed more at an adult audience, like in punk rock venues and that kind of feel to it. There's a real, like, almost I guess, hips the feel to it, doesn't it, in the UK?
Yeah, definitely.
The cool thing, like, there's a buzz about it where it's like, let's go to the show, have a couple beers, and watch the guys, you know, Is there any shows that you guys aren't allowed to do through WWE? Like, do you have to ask them, and they say yes, yes, yes?
Well, we run everything by them, and so far we haven't really had any no's. It's just keeping them aware of what we're doing. I mean, I think it'd be silly of us to try and do anything on TV or anything like that. I'm sure we can't. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
But as we just run everything by them, and so far they've been really lenient and let us do pretty much whatever we've wanted.
Triple H, if you can, and Seaman, or
for both, and Regal as well.
Regal as well.
Yeah.
So, how influential and helpful has Regal been?
Well, I don't think we'd have jobs if it wasn't for him.
Did he scout you?
Yeah, he did.
Was it about October time, something like that?
So I was sitting at home one day and I had a show in Mansfield, the most routine show. There's maybe like 50, 60 people. I was just, I, it wasn't something I was massively motivated for. And I'd had a bunch of missed calls off a number, and the third or fourth time it rang me, it said Stamford, Connecticut on it. So I was like, okay, I should probably pick up.
It's either you hired or you're fired.
So I picked it up, and it was Regal. But at that point, I'd maybe spoke to him maybe once on Twitter or something. But other than that, I had no contact. And he said he wanted to come down to that show in Mansfield and watch me wrestle that day. And he did, and talked to me afterwards, giving me a bunch of advice, and offered me the tryout for November. So that was for me. And then I think a week later, he saw you guys, right?
I think it was the same. Was that the Friday?
I guess it must have been one.
I know, or it might have been the Saturday, actually. I think yours was
tag match again.
With you.
Yeah, so I guess it would have been the day after, right?
So I think, yeah, it was. The Friday, I was in Manchester for ICW. They were doing a little tour. And I wrestled Mikey Whiplash. And after the match, which, incidentally, the finisher was a pile driver off the top rope.
Which Regal loved, by the way. Regal loved.
I didn't know he was even in the building. So we've been setting up this thing. It was a good context, trust me. And then
was Mikey Whiplash a legendary version of Mikey Whipwreck?
Oh, he's actually like a British wrestling legend. Whiplash is like, he's been wrestling for, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Okay.
So, something like that, yeah.
So you set up the pile driver.
So we've been setting this, like, yeah, and did it completely perfectly safe. Anyway, I've come out the back, everyone's fine, everything like that. And then someone pokes their head in the window and they go, Regal wants to chat with you. I was like, oh, well, where now? Which one? What are you talking about? And then he walked in, I was like, hi, sorry.
And the thing about Regal, even this, I've known Regal for 20 freaking 5 years, and still, he's got an intimidating presence. You know, he's really funny and goofy, but at first he comes in very serious, probably with some kind of a suit jacket on or whatever, and it's almost kind of like, it's a little bit, I'm sure it was intimidating for you guys.
He's tall?
Yeah, he's deceivingly tall, because he wrestles slower than he actually is. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big man.
I feel very protected. So then that happened, and we didn't really have much conversation. I don't know whether he was not very too pleased with what we're doing. Then the next day he went and seen him, and then the Sunday we were at Progress. And the story that was going through was me and him were together, and him and another guy, Damien Dunn, were together. And they wanted to switch me, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was like a double switch, I think.
Yeah, they wanted me to switch, to turn heel on him.
Mustache Mountain, it was you and Peter.
So that was the start of the British Strong Style, which is eventually the three of us. But yeah.
So then I...
That's the name of your group?
Yeah. So I turned on him, and he was watching it. And he was just...
Watching?
Yeah, and he just goes, oh, that was... It was incredible. It was really well done, like great facials and the way that we worked into like the deception and everything like that. And he loved it. And then about that, didn't have much conversation with him. I only found out because Finn Balor.
We had to leave, didn't we?
Yeah, we had to go straight away and go to Glasgow to do
for
to do that night. So we did that in the afternoon. Boom, straight to Stansted.
On the plane in your gear.
The plane in our gear. Straight to Glasgow, jumped out of Glasgow, straight into a taxi, boom, turned up, and then wrestled the show at the ABC, wasn't it? It was really good. Yeah, and then about 2 weeks after that, I get like a text message from Finn Balor, and he was like, you've impressed someone. And I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, Regal keeps talking to me about you. Says he loves you. Says you've done really, really well, really, really well when he was over there. I was like, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. I'm getting excited now. And then he contacted us all and then organised us all to come down and do the tryouts. And
That's it. So when the tryouts happened, how quickly did you know afterwards that you had a job?
So we kind of left there feeling like the tryout went great. Obviously, we had that match. Yeah. So we had that match, and then we'd kind of talked to Regal afterwards, and he kept hinting that there was something coming. But we kind of left there feeling like it went really well, but, you know, we're too young, or maybe we're not what they're looking for right now. We went straight into a week of shows, wasn't it? Went from there into the, I think it was New Japan shows and stuff. Oh, yeah, and then we did New Japan shows over here. So we were kind of onto the next thing and just thought, if something happens...
Yeah. You did the best you could do.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It didn't work out.
Yeah. Because, you know, we're young, and Regal obviously seemed to like us, and we knew we had the contact there now. It was a good experience, and we were happy. But then within a week, I think it was, he contacted us and offered us a retainer, which we didn't fully understand at the time, and that quickly developed into the
I don't fully understand it either. Explain what that was.
So they were trying to develop that UK tournament, which we didn't know at the time. So when they first offered us those deals, that's what it only took, what, 1 or 2 days before they told us, okay, we're ready to go on this tournament. Then it made more sense.
Gotcha.
Within a month, we were doing a press conference, and then a month later was the tournament. So it went so fast.
Yeah.
So the retainer was basically just to retain your services until we could
just
figure out.
Yeah. Keep us exclusive.
Gotcha.
Because they wanted to do that show, yeah.
Before we talk about the tournament, I want to go back to them, but let's go back to what you talked about, the Butlins, which is something that us in the wrestling business know about, and especially you guys over here. Explain what that is to people who might not know what that means, working the Butlins.
So it's like...
You have those summer camps?
I guess,
in like America. It's a similar type to
that,
I suppose.
Holiday camps, we're supposed to do the UK, though.
So we have like a lot of seaside destinations and stuff, but on a lot of them, there'll be a Butlins or a Pontins or a Haven camp, which are different brands, but it's a similar thing. So you'd stay there in a chalet or a caravan, whichever one you're renting out, and then there'll be like a hall on the place where there's entertainment all day long. So you'll basically, say if you're doing a loop of maybe 5 different camps, you'll do each one of them in a week. You might do doubles in the same day. So you set the ring up, you do the show, get back in the van, set the ring up at the next one, do a show, and you just rotate the same venues for the whole of the summer.
For the entertainment for the camp.
Yeah. Children's entertainment, basically.
Sometimes there's a band playing, there's wrestling.
Maybe clowns and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
We went to a holiday camp. We played at a festival called Hard Rock Hell. It was in Prestatyn, Wales.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of like a Butlins type thing. Or like, this is going to be cool. And we go there, and it's like, you know, the chalet is like, let's be honest, what a chalet is. It's like a wooden...
It's a shed.
Yeah.
It's freezing. Cold. The festival was in this beer hall that just reeked of beer and cigarettes, and I was like, okay, here's the real holiday camp.
Yeah.
You have to get like tokens for electricity and stuff like that.
You know, you get water, yeah. Right? So would it be a fun experience to do those? Would the kids be cool, or would they be little brats? Or?
Yeah, the wrestling side of it is sort of, it's secondary to the, it, at the time as well, it was the only way to earn regular money off of wrestling. So I would do a lot of them kinds of things, because you knew you could get a few weeks out of the summer where you're going to wrestle every day. But the wrestling kind of comes secondary, because a lot of the kids there, they're just screaming and shouting. They don't care what they're seeing. Yeah, they want to see the Dudley boy. Yeah, not me.
I want to see the Dudley boy. But that's about right. You know, I remember we did a couple shows in Minehead.
Yeah.
Holiday camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're doing it this year, aren't they?
Is that the biggest?
So there's 3 Butlins camps, which are the really big ones, which is Minehead's one. I think Skegness might be one. Mm, I forget. Yeah. So they're bigger ones. I think those are the most fun.
I worked Batista at one time at Minehead, and I went to swing a chair at him, and he ducks, and I hit the post. When I hit the post, I lost control of the chair, and it shot right into the crowd. And I just see it in slow motion, just heading for this little head. And then it just kind of like just grazed past. But I just never forget that. Like, these kids are just cheering. Here comes this chair. And I was like, eesh. I just wanted to get fired. So how was it for you guys traveling around? You mentioned when you started to be on the floor of the car and stuff. How was that over the years? Did you get to finally get a seat at some point?
So with the camps, a lot of it's just in the back of the ring van.
Yeah.
That was usually the deal. I mean, doing shows on like the Isle of Wight, where you have to go over on the ferry. He didn't want to pay for every person to have a ticket for the ferry. So he'd just smuggle us in the back of the van. And then when the ferry left, he runs back down, lets us out. We run up and then...
Like hiding underneath
the... Underneath the crash pads or whatever, yeah. Right now, like sleeping on the ring post.
Did you guys ever go to other countries when you were here?
I've never done anything, like I say, like particularly like the camp show stuff. I mean, we wrestled in Italy, Germany, I mean, you've done quite a few random little.
I've done like tours of I've done tours of Japan, States, China. Michinoku Pro, I was there for 3 months. Yeah.
So Super Delphin still there?
No, no, he wasn't there. Sasuke was there. He was still in there. Yeah.
Sasuke was like a senator or something. He wears mask.
Yeah, he was doing that. We'd be in the 7-Eleven because I used to travel with him most days. So he'd be in the 7-Eleven walking around with his mask on and just never takes it off. Yeah.
The one time I think he got sworn in as like the senator and they made him take his mask off to make sure it was really him. Yeah. And not like somebody else getting sworn in, senator, whatever the hell he is, whatever it might be or whatever. What's the worst place that you guys ever wrestled in? For me, it was at a kid's birthday party in a Quonset, which is a big barn. In the middle of February in Canada with about 8 kids and 4 soccer moms, and I got paid a hot dog and a glass of orange juice.
To be fair, funnily enough, we were talking to Dave Mastiff last week, and he goes, yeah, I did a show and no one turned up.
Look, no one.
Zero. He went, and he went, the
promoter. Not an exaggeration.
No, he went.
No one showed up.
He goes, the promoter came over and he went, right, lads, I'm going to go open the door now. But literally just opened the door. There's no queue. There's no one waiting. He just opened a door and then closed it and then went, back the ring up, lads. We're going to go.
I did a motorbike festival, Bulldog Bash, if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
And so it was like anyone who paid for a ticket, they would just run a show. So like throughout the day, we wrestled in front of one person, 2 people, just whoever paid for the ticket. Yeah,
so hard.
But I was so excited to wrest at the time. Yeah, I didn't care if anyone showed up. Yeah, just jump off the top rope.
The Pride Festival.
Wasn't it that one? Though.
Oh, that was rough, wasn't it?
What was that?
It was just like a.
Is this summer?
This is recent. Yeah,
this is recent.
It's like a alternative rock festival. Isn't it?
The company I run, they reached out to us and they wanted us to put wrestling on. It seemed like a pretty good festival. They had like Puddle of Mud and like some famous bands, but it was just a shambles by the time they got there. I wasn't actually there, but
about 60 people there. So like when it started pouring it down with rain, everyone from the festival was in the tent where we were wrestling, and it was just
they're just trying to find shelter.
Yeah.
But there was like people trying to get in and.
Yeah.
And get in the ring and everything.
Trying to get in the ring and fight us. And, so, like, in the end, we were just like, oh, let's just have fun with it.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we just had, like, loads of boards that we were using as tables. And
that's all you can do, right?
Yeah, just mucking around.
I saw you guys at Download this year, right? I know I saw
Yeah.
A picture of the 3 of us. 3 of us. Kind of a conversation.
Secret conversation.
So secret conversation. I just saw that. Where did that come from?
Is his name... Oh God, he's gonna hate me for this. I can't remember his name, but he's one of the
was it Hanrahan?
The photographers for WWE.
Okay. There was like something you guys were there. And I just saw it. Like there's this wise conversation between the talking about the chick with the big tits. But it looks really. Like, how did you guys like that? The download.
I thought it was a great experience. Yeah. I mean, funnily enough, I went the year before, so I went there, watched the NXT show, and it was cool. It was like it was really good seeing like. People who had like just signed for the PC wrestle in that kind of environment. And then I remember we were stood next to where they did the autograph signing, and I got chatting to the security guard there. I went, mate, do me a favor, let me just jump up and sit down behind the table and just take a picture of you like trying to drag me away. And he was like, oh yeah, go on then. And then a year later, I was sat there with the same security guy next to me actually signing the autograph.
About the tournament, the UK tournament, which was held, was it in Norwich?
No,
Blackpool.
January Blackpool.
So how many guys were in it?
16-man tournament, and then I think they had a few extra for like dark matches and stuff like
so
that.
Was 16 guys signed, or are you guys like just the 3 that have the?
I don't actually know.
I know
there are more people, but I don't know the exact number of that. But I'd say that maybe the majority.
Because I know was that you mentioned Mastiff. Did you say Mastiff?
No, Mastiff was contracted to the ITV World of Sport thing.
Because there's a guy, who's the guy that's in NXT now? He's a big dude, he's an English guy.
Damo.
Oh, big Damo, yeah.
It is Aleister Black?
He's,
well, he wrestled on that show, but he wasn't part of the tournament. He was a surprise.
Neville,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you get there and I remember it was like the crazy reaction, the crowd was going nuts, it was a good response. Right?
Yeah, it was wild.
I think it was that it was combining the WWE stuff with the names that we'd built up on the independents. So most of the audience there were there to support people that they saw from the independents.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was in that kind of venue that we wrestle in all the time, which I think definitely helped because the way it looked on screen is what a lot of people have talked about, like the big ballroom and stuff. It had a real British feel to it.
Yeah.
It's like we were wrestling in Downton Abbey. That's what it looks like. A lot of Americans have said that to me, like the one thing that appealed to them so much about their thing was just the setup. They're like, oh, that's what every hall must be like in England. I'm like, yes, they are. Like please don't have a look.
By the way, it's Downton, not downtown. It's downtown, but so is Downton Abbey. I would pronounce it Downton Abbey. So the final is you and Pete.
There you go.
So when did you find out that you were going to be the first champion?
It was probably about an hour or two before the show, wasn't it? Finlay called us to the side and gave us the result.
Cool. I think it's good because it's such a close group we all have. It was like, I mean, it doesn't really matter which one of us this goes to. Like, we're all happy for everyone and we're putting the best show we can. So
I remember Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero used to argue over who was going over, but not in the normal way. Dean would be like, I'm putting you over. And he's like, no, I'm putting you over. I'm putting you, you son of a bitch. I'm putting you. Like, arguing the other way around, right? But that's when you got your good friends. Like, you see, who cares? Just have a great show on the
beach. It's just a massive stage to show what we can do.
Exactly.
That was the point where it was just like, no matter, from our perspective, no matter who walked out of there, you know, with it, all our goal was just go out there and just kill it and just just put it on the map and go, look, this is what we can do. And
because I think for us it's not our goal right now isn't so much to conquer NXT, go to the main roster and do all that. Like, that's something we want to do obviously, but we want to build a UK show. That's right. the main objective. So yeah. If you know, the best result that could have came out of it was people buzzing about the show. Didn't matter who won or whatever, as long as every match was the best it could have been. Right. That was kind of the mentality we all had.
That's what I would say too, is if WWE is not going anywhere right now for you guys, this is the best place for you to learn and continue to grow and build this side of the coin. They know you exist, obviously you're on the payroll, so there's really no rush. You know?
Yeah, I was convinced that I wasn't going to be winning though. Because even at the tryout when I was talking to Regal about it, because at the time I was 19 years old as well.
Right.
So I was just like, well, I'm a bit younger, like, I'm not expecting.
I understand, anything. Yeah.
But it works in your favour,
I guess. It's going to be like a second round. Have a good match.
Yeah. Show us what you could do. Yeah. But I mean, how many chances do you have to crown the youngest ever singles champion?
Well, that's amazing. So you were 19 at the time or 20?
I was 19.
That's insane. Because yeah. I think, like, if I was, well, I started when I was 19, and if my first year was offered, like, a WWE. Yeah.
Oh, and a belt and a title as well.
Right, exactly. It's like, well, I'm done. Did you guys, who was at that tournament? Because it was Regal there.
Yeah.
Was Triple H there?
Yeah.
Matt Bloom was there.
Finlay.
Finlay's another one who's like, that's, I mean, obviously coming from over here, it's pretty big respect for him as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Huge.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Dave Taylor.
Yeah,
Dave Taylor, there's another guy. Was he there?
Yeah.
Robbie was there as well.
Robbie was there.
Another great guy, yeah. Does Dave have an affiliation with the WWE? Or?
Not 100% sure, to be honest. Yeah.
Finlay, the last couple of tours I did, we went to China and somewhere else where, like, you know, you go, the China tour we did was like so much traveling within the course of like 2 or 3 days that, you know, I went out drinking and I just passed out on the floor of my room. And I wake up in the morning with Finlay, like, kicking me because he was the agent on the tour. He's like, get up. I'm like, get up for what? It was the flight. I'm like, I'll take the next one. Because we're in Shanghai, there is no next one. Get up. And I'm like, shit. So he just texted me the day I mentioned I was on tour in Belfast. He goes, you need an alarm clock? A real life alarm clock kicking you while you're down on the ground. So if you guys, you did the tournament here, but then you went to the States. Was that for around WrestleMania time? Because you guys had, I want to talk about this match that you guys had, which blew the doors out at the NXT TakeOver the night before WrestleMania.
No, it was the
one before, wasn't it?
Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago, I think it was before Backlash, wasn't it? Was it the day before? Yeah.
So tell us about how that came about.
So we'd gone over to the States a couple of times in between, hadn't we? Just spending time in the Performance Center and doing NXT TV.
Yeah.
And then it built up to us doing that rematch in Chicago.
A few tapings over here in Norwich.
As well, yeah. Which was maybe 2 weeks before or a week before, maybe. It was quite close.
Yeah, it was quite close, yeah.
But yeah, so that was a massive stage for us to do that again. But like I say, the wrestling side of it to us, we've done that so many times. Like, I had a big hand in training him, so I've literally known him since he first got into wrestling. So it was, once we were in there, it was the, you know, just like business as usual. But I don't think we realized what we'd done until after, because when, especially for us, we're used to these intimate audiences where you can see every face, you can hear every comment, and then when you're in there, it just, it's different. Like, you can't hear the a lot of the noise.
So far away, you can just see faces and people jumping up and down with their arms in the air, but you can't actually hear them. It's really weird.
So we say that it's like one moving, pulsating animal. Crowd. Like, you can see a couple faces, but then it just comes to just like nothingness. You know, just you hear and see the movement, but you know what I mean? I always got that.
So then when I got to the back, the first person who greeted me there was Pat Patterson. And he had really kind words to say, and then...
Did you understand what he was saying?
Barely, but everyone was telling me, like, he doesn't do this often, so this is special, so...
Pat's like the Jedi, too, like, when he says it, that's the real deal.
Yeah. And then all the producers lined up, and they told me to stay in character for it, because they were filming, so I had to apologise to everyone afterwards, like, I wasn't ignoring you, I promise, you know? And then Triple H pulled me in, and then had some kind words to say, but you hadn't even came back yet, had you? So then they pulled me in to do media, and the guy from ESPN said, how does it feel? You just had match of the year. I was like, oh, did we? Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then we sat in the hotel and watched it, didn't we? After that, and we were like trying to watch it on his phone. And then we were like counting the standing ovations and the reactions, which we had no idea was happening when we were in there. So it was only afterwards. And then there was tweets coming in from Stone Cold, and like, we're like, oh, I guess we did something really cool, but at the time it was so hard to feel that in the moment, because
it's interesting.
Yeah,
like you say, because you guys just weren't used to a stage that big.
Yeah, it's the biggest we've done, I guess, at that point. Yeah.
It was about 15,000, 16,000, something like that.
Because once you get used to it, that's all you would notice. It's like, okay, we got him now.
Yeah.
Just like, calm down, just be cool, let him go. But being there for the first time, hearing that side of it is interesting.
Yeah.
From doing independent shows as well, you kind of zoom in through matches really fast, and like it's so much different on TV, because there's so many different cameras, and you have to think about how long you like lying there for, because they've got to get so many different angles if you just lie in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're used to working for the audience's reaction, so as soon as the audience come down, we're like, okay, the next thing, let's bring them back. Whereas out there, it's like, okay, we're in a replay, and then they got to get angles of me and him, and then back to me, and then back to him. The commentators have got to help tell you story, so it's a completely different world. We're saying we felt like we were lying down on the floor for so much of it, but when you watch it back, in that
edited,
once it's all put together, it has a completely different feel. Which again, I think that adds to why we didn't know what we'd done until afterwards when we got there to watch it back. So it's a big learning curve.
Yeah, it's interesting you guys have the maturity to realize that, because a lot of times when people work, you know, I was talking to Drew McIntyre, Galloway, he had no idea what the hard camera was the first time he came to WWE. What's the hard camera? Face the hard camera? What are you talking about? You know, there's more people over there. No, face there. It's a weird thing, but that's what you're playing to the camera. You know, whenever I would sell, where's the camera at? So make sure your face is up a little bit so that at least they got a shot, whatever. But it takes a while to learn that, to figure that out.
Well, like we just keep getting thrown in at the deep end completely, so it's always sort of a hindsight thing for us, and then picking up on what we did and how we could change afterwards when we try and watch it back. And then I think as well that's helped us. The reason it's gone so fast for us is because maybe we did come in a little bit naive, so sometimes we're working like we do on the independents, and when the audience are enjoying it, obviously it watches a lot easier back home. So maybe that did help. We talk about that a lot, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact that, like, you just to touch on what you said there, like the fact that the tournament was the first thing we'd ever done recorded television for the biggest wrestling company you can wrestle for, and it was live, wasn't it? Both days were live streamed to the network. Yeah, wow. We were like, oh, okay, let's do that then. Well, let's not only have a tournament to crown a brand new champion, but we'll do it live. Like, nothing had ever been live on the net. I think maybe the Cruiserweight Classic final two rounds or something like that was the only thing that was ever like live streamed, other than, you know, proper
Raw, or
a pay-per-view or stuff. Yeah. And we were like, oh, okay. Well, yeah.
That was the scariest one for me. It wasn't the wrestling or anything like that. It was after one of the matches on the tournament, they said, oh, we're going to do a promo with you on the stage right afterwards, like an on-stage interview, which is going out live to potentially 2 million people, I guess, on the network. So for me, on the independents, and we never cut promos, it's not something we've ever done, so there's another one of them thrown in the deep end moments. I was like, oh, I guess I've got to learn fast.
Yeah,
And it's not scripted or anything like that. They're still learning who we are as characters because it was rushed so fast. So it was kind of an open conversation. What do you want to say? And, you know, just briefed on it a little bit and then expected to go out there and attempt to nail it. So
it's always hard too, like when you have however many guys, you said there's 16 guys in the tournament. It's like so many new guys at once. That's happening now with the 205 guys. It happened with the girls and they brought them all in as the Divas Revolution. It takes a while for the dust to settle for people to realize, okay, that guy is, you know, the guy who sings, or this guy is the guy who has a chipped tooth, or you know what I mean? Like it takes a while. It's hard when you guys all get put in at the same time. Mm. Go on, guys. Go stand out. Do something.
Yeah.
You know, and you were given the chance, obviously, with your match, which is great. But for example, for you, Trent, what is your character? What is it you want to get across?
Well, I mean, luckily the whole Mustache Mountain thing has flowed through and transcended through. And, you know, we went out to, what was it? It was the Barclays Center for that NXT TV taping. And we came out to Chants of Mustache Mountain, and I'm like, it's working. We're doing it. Yeah. So, and you know, there was Chants of This Is Progress and all that kind of stuff. And then he comes out, and they're like, Bruiserweight, Bruiserweight. And we're like,
Bruiserweight, that's right.
We're like, oh, okay. Okay. I feel like we're starting to really make the transition sure, through now. Like, they know who we are.
I think because we were never satisfied with what we were doing, we always wanted to do more. We'd watch people like yourself, or like, you know, the analogy I always use is if I said to these two now, go out and wrestle and you're The Rock and you're Rob Van Dam, you could do that match almost because they've spent so long establishing the same stuff. Right. And that's what we always tried to do, whether I was wrestling in front of 50 people in Mansfield or, you know, 700 people at Progress. It was, I got to do the same few things that make me and you know, you're brilliant at it and so is Tyler. I think we've just kept that same mentality, whether it's Takeover or whether it's still the independence that we do now. These are the three things that make us, and we got to do them every single time.
And we were saying yesterday when we were in the train, it's like we're so into the fact, like, if you say a wrestler's name, what was his music? Can you hum his music, right? Can you do his pose? And can you do his finisher? And if you can tell me or do all those three, then you're on the way.
And whether it's the independence or whether it's WWE, it's the same.
Exactly. No matter whether it's Stone Cold smashing glass and doing a stunner, it needs to be like, you know, Joe Bloggs on the independence. You know, he needs to have that music, that pose, and that finisher. So when the crowd are looking for it, you know, you watch a Randy Orton match, the crowd are just aching to see the DDT through the rope. Mm-hmm. They're just, he's going to do it, he's going to do it. And I remember someone saying to me years ago, they went, imagine if you went to a show and Triple H came out and didn't spit the water. I'd have cried. I'd just be devastated, wouldn't you? But it built, you know, those are the three things for me that always built up in my head was like, you got to have a moveset so people can see things coming. You got to have music that people know and you got to have a taunt that people can copy.
Yeah, that's the trap that a lot of people on the independents fall into, because you work in so many different shows. So it's really easy to get bored of yourself and think that what you're doing isn't getting over. But you fail to realise that you're working, like, you've only been doing that for, like, a month.
Yeah.
In front of...
Well, yeah.
100 people in Mansfield and then 100 people in Nottingham. They're totally separate people.
And then the step further is, you know, people think, especially when you're doing stuff like the camps, it's, okay, I'm a heel tonight and this guy's a babyface. Tomorrow maybe I'm a babyface and this guy's a heel. So you just become the generic idea of a heel and a face. That's the way Britain was. Whereas for me especially, it's if I bite someone and the audience cheers or they boo, I'm the same person. It doesn't, you know, it's the same character every time.
But it's interesting too, like you said that, because it is very much the case. Like, even talk about, like, you want to see a rock and roll band. Like, you go see AC/DC and they don't have the big blow up Rosie for Hall of Rosie and the cannons for those about to rock and the bell for Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
You'd be ripped off.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, if they just played a bunch of obscure songs that you didn't know because they're trying to get cute, that's not good.
Yeah.
It's just like you said, you have to have your three or four moves that people know. Once you can establish that, your finisher, maybe one or two ancillary moves, I have three. But that's all you need. And then you can try and get a little bit cute, but you really don't even need that. You know what I mean? I could base the whole match around the Walls of Jericho and the Codebreaker, maybe a Lion Soul, maybe a dropkick off the second. That's pretty much all I do. The rest is character and connection.
Yeah.
If you can do that, then you can start twisting it so people, you know, Lion Soul, put your knees up or move out of the way. Or if you try and do too many things at once, it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
What's your finish? Like you said, what's the lead up to this. You mentioned Randy Orton. Randy does the DDT and the RKO. Yeah. That's it. Maybe a power slam.
Mm-hmm. The crowd got nuts. Yeah.
That's it.
Well, it's like if someone in the indies wants to do the corner dropkick, there's a, I'll give you the Jericho. Yeah, you know, once you get to that point, it's that's your thing forever, you know, and that's what people want us to.
Something we do a lot, though, like we'll call matches, but with people's names.
Yeah, like, the whole thing. Yeah. So it's like, okay, Banderas in the apron, Jericho dropkick.
Actually, we've got to the point where we did a show recently where we swapped roles. So Tyler was me and I was him. We swapped gear and we swapped moves and we did the set pretty much the same match, but the other way around. And he got a lot of press on the internet and stuff like that. But that the reason that went over so well was because we spent so much time trying to establish these little things that we do. So the second I'd do his clothesline thing off the rope, you know, the crowd went crazy and he was biting me and whatnot, you know.
So when, let's for example, like the WWE is about ready to come over here and do a tour, the UK tour, are you guys on that at all?
Yep.
So all you guys?
Yep. I don't think all 16 or the maximum of the guys, but there's at least five, six, maybe seven guys.
Were the guys cool with you when you're on the bus?
Yeah, it was really good atmosphere, really cool. Wasn't it? It was cool.
They're really cool.
It was cool to see how that's done. You know, it's one of the things you think about sometimes. So, you know, you kind of, especially being from the indies, you always think, how does all that sort of stuff work? And then to be a part of it and see the way it's all put together, you know, it's a completely different sort of production to what we're used to, right? Yeah.
Well, even like to travel on a bus together, yeah. You know, catering's there. Like, it's funny. Like, if you are ever hungry on a WWE overseas tour, then you're just a fatso because they give you so much food.
It's ridiculous.
It's, like, it's in the morning, and it's when you get there, and it's after the show, and it's, there's food at the arena. I was like, oh my gosh.
On the coach, it's
yeah,
like
the coach as well.
Nando's right. And all kinds of stuff on the coach for everyone.
Nando's so good. Have you done any shows in the States besides the one we spoke about?
We've been over to the Performance Center a bunch of times, and we've done like the local shows for NXT and
the smaller tour for the Florida. Yeah.
Palm Beach, Florida, the coconut shows.
Yeah.
But we've all done stuff before that WWE as well. Like
I've done PWG. Stuff like that, yeah.
We did Shikara a few times. What else?
Yeah, that's right. I
did CZW back in the day.
Crazy.
I flew myself out there for 3 months at one point because wrestling here just wasn't given enough. So that year I spent about 6 months out of the country. All over. We did 11 states while we were there. So if we didn't have anywhere to stay, we'd just get on a Greyhound bus and go to the next state, see if we could find a show there.
Who were you with?
So, Mark Andrews is another guy who's signed to the WWE.
Just go try and show up and say, hey, we're here, guys.
We went over there we had one booking and we had 3 days in the hotel. But once we got there, we didn't have to have a single other day in a hotel. We just met people, bounced around, stayed in people's basements and whatnot. And we ended up with nearly 30 shows by the end of it.
It's not bad.
Yeah. So
it was, must have been some adventures there.
Yeah, it was one of the best times of my life. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
It's crazy, yeah.
Was everybody's house very nice? Or was
it definitely not there. So it was the time in like crappy basements. But that's part of the fun to us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's
the early we shared a bed way too many times.
But those are the good times, you know, like I think like, it's great being on this side of the coin, but I still remember I talked about that Hamburg trip, like just staying in a shitty hotel in the Reaper Bond, you know, with blood stain on the wall. And, you know, it's like
it's the chase. I think we talk about it all the time, definitely. Even though we still got a lot more to do. It's not as fun now as it was before. Now, obviously, we're reaping the rewards, and it's brilliant. Do you know what I mean? It's what we always aimed for, and I'm so glad we've got to do it, especially this young. But that chase to get to it was where you had all the adventures. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you guys think of the States when you first saw you going? What's the biggest differences between Britain and the States?
The food.
Yeah.
It's
plastic, man.
Even you trying to, like, the fruit's just coated in sugar. Yeah. Yeah.
It's white down to
it. Like, you can't eat fruit because there's wax all over.
It's weird. I don't even know. Like, if you go, like some place and you buy, like, the grapes, like the at Wawa. Like, yeah, they're like, they taste like they're dipped in syrup. I'm like, no, I just want the grape.
Yeah.
Even bread tastes like sugar there.
Really?
It's weird. Yeah.
It's interesting because it's funny because coming here, like I said, sometimes I find the food to be a little bit bland.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you're saying is too much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's almost perfect because we find everything is just so over-flavoured with, like, salt and sugar there that here, it definitely would be bland to you.
Yeah, for sure, right.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is the sausages here for breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Breakfast sausages are just amazing. So good. Bacon is the shits here though.
You don't like it? No?
It's like raw.
Your bacon's like ham though, isn't it?
Yeah, but yours is like the stripy wiggly stuff.
Yeah, yours is
like rashes.
We call it back bacon.
Oh, okay.
You have to be cooked more. Here it's just kind of like a floppy, like,
is that, Canada's like the happy medium. I was there a few weeks ago and I was like, is this somewhere between the two?
So there's a lot of British influence, like British comedies. I grew up with like Fawlty Towers and Python and all that stuff. And Canadian British humor is very similar, very dry and strange and weird. But yeah, it is the happy medium. It's the place in between.
I mean, you spent quite a lot of time there recently and I think we did like a weekend or like a long weekend there for Shikara or something. Yeah, we were resting there for Shikara and stuff, and we loved it. Yeah, I'll be honest, it was just so clean. It was so clean.
Friendly
and,
people.
Yeah, it's just really.
It's like America, but a little more laid back.
Yeah. Just a little bit more relaxed.
Resting. There's a company called Destiny, and they work out of Santino's gym, Battle Arts. It's an amazing setup, and I've done two tours for them now. So yeah, it's always great to go there. I have a great time.
So when you guys were kids, were you big wrestling fans?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Massive. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was wrestling too.
when you were kids.
Yeah,
I think.
Kids,
yeah, when you were kids, Tyler, you won a WWE title. So well done.
Yeah, right. Teenager. So did you ever go to the shows when we came to town or when WWE came to town?
We go to like the almost the equivalent of what we're doing now.
Yeah, I went to more independents, but I saw three WWE shows, two of which were at the NEC in Birmingham, and one was in that venue in Chicago where we did Takeover, funny enough. So now I've managed to go full circle and I've wrestled at both of them. It was when we were touring the States, that tour we did, and they just happened to be in town. So we got like nosebleed seats and went to see. So it's funny how it's come full circle. I've got to do the NEC last time on the tour, and I got to do that same venue in Chicago.
That's cool. How about you, Pete?
So I think you like Trent's probably the same as me. I was a proper like indie smart mark fan, so I didn't actually watch all that much of WWE. I was watching AJ Styles in the sports hall in front of like 20 people, you know, that was sort of
WWE and stuff.
Loki and people like that. That was my stuff.
I mean, obviously, I got hooked a long time before Tyler was born. I remember the first VHS that my dad got recorded off some bloke at work who knew that I liked wrestling or something. It was like WrestleMania 5 or something. And like, I remember watching like, Owen Hart versus Mr. Perfect. He's the Blue Blazer then. And that got me hooked. And then it was like Randy Savage versus Flair. I remember that sticking out in my head from like WrestleMania 8. And then like wrestling was just cool and it just got cooler. But like it kind of goes through waves, didn't it? Like as you're growing up through school, some of your friends think it's cool. Some of your friends think you're a bit of a dork if you're watching wrestling. You're like, oh, who are the hottest girls hanging around with though? Who are the coolest lads? And like you're trying to like fit into the groups. Yeah,
so they're not hanging around with Tiger Kids. So I can tell you.
Or Ben Shamrock.
I want to see that mask. It's really well done, dude.
It's literally just Tiger mask. It's like one of the commercial ones off highspots.com.
And then it was like, and then when we went to college, it was like, oh no, wrestling's cool again. And that was like Attitude Era, late 90s. And it was like, oh my God, things are just blowing up now. But yeah, I was hooked on like ECW, like Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn. That stuff, I was watching it going, how do they even remember this? What do they even say to each other before they go out there? I don't even know. It was just madness.
What did you think of, I was going to ask you before when you were talking about the States, what did you think of people's accents there?
It's the things with the States is it all felt like a massive cliche to me. Like everything that you see on the movies or in like, I remember we even went to like high school football games and it was like being at WrestleMania. There was like fireworks and cheerleaders and like bonfires.
Flyovers from like...
Yeah, so even the accents were the same. It's just all so cliche. Like exactly what I thought in my mind is what it was. I mean, you might have the same thing when you come to Britain, but...
Well, I've been here so many times that you just get used to it. Like I said, for me, like all you guys are like, easy to understand, but I'll still... Like in Ireland yesterday in Belfast, I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. I'm not an idiot. Like I've been around, and I know a lot of Irish people. There's some like guys from Wales, there's Cardiff. There's some guys that speak very proper, like you, and there's some guys that I don't know what they're talking about.
Still the same as us.
They're Scotland.
Like an hour or two.
Yeah, I can't understand people in Scotland though.
Newcastle.
Yes.
Yeah. Real proper Scousers, like from Liverpool, people.
Man, it's like
it is.
Yeah, it's just, and
I don't even know what to say. I have no idea. I just go, yeah, twice. Yeah.
It's funny because I'm a huge Beatles fanatic, and you can see, like, in the 60s when they came over, now Paul's much more elegant, so he's turned it off, and so is Regal. Like, it's there, but it's not, but then when you hear the real, it's like what you said. Like, I call it, like, there's Canada's like that too, Canadian rednecks. Like, hey, God, what's going on? Hey, what's going on with me, Jamie? You sound like an idiot. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. What's going on, man?
I've noticed with Regal, though, so he'll speak really proper, but then when he starts speaking to us, he starts to go more and more brummy. Yeah. Have you noticed? And he starts to change a little bit.
He did that for years because he was Lord Stephen Regal, or William Regal, which was a very proper, you know, Queen's English type guy, right?
I think the biggest thing with Americans, it's not so much the accent understanding them. It's a very different sense of humor. Especially the way that, like, sarcastic. Trent jokes around, and the way the sarcastic sense of humor, a lot of times it just goes completely over their heads. Right. They don't get it at all.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we don't really get their sense of humor either. It's just, that's the one thing, because we've been there so many times now, that's the one thing that still sticks with me a little bit, that makes conversations sometimes a little bit difficult.
Yeah, well, I said there's a different sense of humor. You know, like, Canadian and British humor is very similar, and a lot of people don't get it. You know, I did a show for CBC a couple months ago, and it's super ridiculously stupid. It's very much like a Benny Hill or a Monty Python. I think it's hilarious. Canada thinks it's hilarious. I showed it to my wife. She's like, I guess it's funny, but no, it's funny. Trust me. If you were Canadian, you would think this was hilarious. Or if you were British. You know?
When I was in the States, I tried to get as many people to watch. You know, The Inbetweeners? Have you ever saw that? I tried to get as many people to watch that as I can. I was like, this is British sense of humor summed up completely. Yeah. If you get this, then you get it. You know.
Well, and there's so many too. Like Ricky Gervais's whole act is based on Basil Fawlty from Fawlty Towers, right?
It's so good.
Gervais is hilarious in The Office and Extras, you know, but it's just an offshoot of John Cleese. But everyone in the States doesn't know that because they don't really know John Cleese. But as a guy who grew up with that, I can just see, oh, you can tell he's a huge, you know, Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, you feel that same awkwardness, like when you just, you know, sometimes you just flick it through Netflix and you're like, oh, I've got nothing to watch. You're like, oh, Fawlty Towers. So you just stick an episode on and you're just cringing.
Yeah.
And then you watch, like, Gervais's kind of like take on it through, like, David Brent, and you're like, oh, God, this is... some of it you can't even watch. It's so good.
You know what I mean? So what's your eventual goal for you guys, to move to the States and be full-time on the roster? Or?
It's hard to say. Like, I think there's a lot of things we want to do. Like, it'd be really cool to do WrestleMania and to get to that point. But we're trying to just, I think a lot of times we sort of look past things. Okay, we spent our whole career doing it. What's next? Whereas now should be the time where we try and enjoy it a bit more, and just whatever happens next. Ideally, we want this UK show to happen, and we want to build something from, you know, from the grassroots and build it up ourselves. That's what, at least for me, I don't speak for you too, but like, that's what I feel the most passionate about now.
And is that the idea, to start like a weekly UK show?
That's what we keep being told. Yeah, that's what we've been told since the start, and they still say that's what they're trying to do. I think it's a complicated process to come over here and film TV so regularly. It's probably a very big expense. So fingers crossed though, something like that happens.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
same vibe, Trent.
Yeah, definitely. Like, obviously, I think our passion for wrestling, as we explained before, the fact that we were like so unhappy with the scene that we just started two companies and then went out there, and then
was
just
your company called?
Fight Club Pro.
Fight Club Pro, and yours was
Attack Wrestling.
And then,
wasn't Fight Club Pro just the other night?
Yeah.
There's people bitching and complaining, like, why is Fozzy on the same night as Fight Club Pro? I don't know, man. I mean, I didn't do it on purpose. So that was your company.
Yeah.
Sell out your show?
Yeah, it was rammed.
We sold out ours too, so.
Good stuff.
There you go.
Good
so
stuff.
There you go, guys. There's room for everyone.
There's room for everyone. But yeah, kind of like, yeah, that's always been the passion, is to like, the byproduct of everything is titles and followers and all that kind of stuff, and that's brilliant, but the real reason why we're doing it is because we were so unhappy with the scene that we just wanted better wrestling. Do you know what I mean? And if that better wrestling allows us to do it in a nightclub with 300 people, that'd be like, wow, that'd be cool. And now it allows us to do it in bigger halls with thousands of people. And now it allows us to do it in the Barclays Center and Chicago in front of 16,000-17,000 people. And, you know, one day, you know, if that WWE United Kingdom title gets defended on WrestleMania, then maybe that's the peak of what we set out to do. I mean, we obviously didn't set out to go, you know what we should do? Let's just work to get in the WWE to give us a title belt to just defend around the world. But do you know what I mean? I feel as though that kind of transgression through just a disappointment with the scene and trying to push British wrestling as far as we possibly could, you know, maybe if you look at it now, that is the pinnacle, is WWE United Kingdom title defended on the main card of WrestleMania.
I think one of the rewarding things as well is like you both know from being in a band and having a group with like you and Eddie and people like that is doing it as a group. That's been one of the most rewarding parts of it. So
definitely.
To think about what we want as singles wrestlers and think, okay, we want to do WrestleMania, we want titles and followers and whatever else, but building something from the grassroots in a group together with the same aim, that right now is more exciting, it's more rewarding, you know.
It's like you said too, I mean, it's very important to enjoy this moment, you know, because like I said, WWE is not going anywhere and this is your time to really make a difference, and it's really cool and admirable that you guys have done this already. There's so much more ahead, but like sometimes we have a tendency to be like, I gotta get to NXT, I gotta go to the main roster. Just in the meantime, just enjoy this.
I remember when we were last at Raw and everyone was talking about how they really want to be on and stuff like that, and they're asking, you know, do you think we'll be on? I was like, I don't want it yet. It's something I really want to do, but I don't want to do everything there is to do in WWE in 1 year, you know? I'd rather say, okay, we'll do that in 2 years when there's more demand and the whole audience wants to see it.
Makes it so much more special.
Oh, yeah.
Last question. It's two-part. What's your favorite match you've ever been in? What's your favorite match you've ever seen? Always the million-dollar question.
Okay, favorite match I've been in, not really for the match, but... when I wrestled Mark Andrews at the UK tournament, because, like I say, we started wrestling together from like 12 years old, and then we seemed to have wrestled each other. We wrestled at PWG, and there was these milestones as we go, and then that was like the final like full circle moment. Like, okay, we got here, we did it, and then that was like the last goal, you know. So that's my favorite match. I have to think about favorite I've ever seen, but
favorite match I've ever been in.
It's a hard question, right?
It is. I suppose in a way, the one that Regal watched because of the memory of what occurred from it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't probably the most, you know, five-star, you know, balls-to-the-wall kind of match that we ever did, but because of that being the focal point, and, you know, the one that a couple of days before with Mikey Whiplash as well at ICW, like, maybe that's it. Do you know what I mean? That not necessarily for what we physically did in it, but from what came from it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think, you know, I've been very lucky to have you know, a lot of really cool matches over the course of the last 2 years, but from what that one then bore, to be honest, another one would be Yuji Nagata. I got to wrestle Yuji Nagata last year.
Here in England,
yeah. New Japan did a tour of Rev Pro, and that was pretty awesome. Yeah.
But I like what you said. Like my favorite match is I had a ladder match with Shawn Michaels for the world title, and the match was killer. But it was the story and the whole journey to get there. Because we were only supposed to have a one pay-per-view match, one and done. And like, this is a waste. So we started in April, and it was supposed to be done at the end of April, went all the way to in October for the world title. And that was never supposed to be it, just the way that the story went. And it's like we worked this whole angle to get to a world title match, ladder match, main event of the pay-per-view. And yes, the match was killer too, but just the whole circumstances behind it is why that's my favorite. Mm. You know, it makes a big difference.
He shoved his head through a telly.
What's that?
He shoved his head through a telly, didn't you?
I did.
He threw his head through a telly. I remember that.
So, Sean.
That was gritty, that one.
Jannetty threw a window.
Yeah.
I threw Sean through a television screen. Then Kevin Owens threw me through a television screen. So someone's got to throw him through some glass at some point. Keep it going. It's like a curse.
Yeah.
What about you, Tyler?
Yeah, probably the takeover match with Pete.
I mean, how could it not be, right?
Like you said earlier, he had a big hand in training me as well, so it's just really cool to do that there.
Yeah, and walk out with people telling you the match of the year.
Yeah.
You know?
It's crazy.
Because that match, I said the ladder match, we did win match of the year, like in the Observer and stuff.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't come out of it going, oh, that was a match of the year. I just came out of it going, that was awesome. You know, it's up to other people to decide if it's a match
of the
year.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, what, you guys want to do that? That's cool. Because all that matters is how you feel after.
And for us, it's like what that match has done for us. So it's increased our stock on the independents like astronomically, and then in the company as well. Like being in the performance center and stuff now, it's not that we didn't have people's respect before. Everyone was really nice, but now I feel like we get treated slightly different because they go, okay, these guys are good. Before, we were probably unknown to a lot of people. They don't, you know, a lot of them as well don't come as wrestling fans. Mm. So they wouldn't know who we are. But I feel like we get a lot more respect from people. And it's sort of done so much for us going forward.
When the company knows that you're out there and you're dangerous, which is good in a good way.
It's like you said earlier, you said like that was the match that really did blow the doors off.
Right, yeah.
Like every single person that comes to the merch table to speak to us says, guys, your match at TakeOver was just incredible.
That's right.
Like, and it's so endearing just to see people just coming up and just saying.
Who would you like to work with on the roster outside of the English guys, the British guys?
AJ Styles is a big one for me. Yeah. Brock Lesnar would be pretty cool. I was thinking about that one.
Tyler, as well as Kane. I think you versus AJ would also be pretty. I'd like to wrestle Kevin Owens again.
Because I
caught him just before he went. Mm. It was like it was the last like swing of independence that he did.
Yeah.
And I wrestled him in front of about 150 people in a dingy nightclub in Wolverhampton for our home promotion, Fight Club Pro. And I just think if I can work to get in a rematch, but on WWE, I think match. That'd be pretty cool.
I wrote a song once called Wolverhampton. It was just like the way that it sounded. My producer was like, what the fuck does this mean? I'm like, I like the name. The song didn't make it out of the lyrics.
Is there a recording of it anywhere?
No, it never made it. It was just lyrics that I wrote. Dude, I'm glad you reached out to me. That was awesome. This is how you become friends with someone nowadays, is you do Twitter messages.
There you go. The power of the blue tick.
You're verifying. Yeah. Thanks, gents. That was awesome.
Thank you very much indeed. Cheers.
All right. Thanks to the lads, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, and Trent Seven. All are performing on the NXT roster on and off. I'm betting you'll see all three on the main roster too before long. Like I said, they should bring all three of them up there together, call them the Hooligans or whatever. And who knows what might happen when WrestleMania rolls around next April. Good luck to them. And thanks again to Pete, Tyler, and Trent for hanging out here on Talk is Jericho. And thanks to all of you for hanging out with Fozzy on the last tour that we just did, the Judas Rising leg, first leg of the Judas Rising tour in 2018 in the United States with Through Fire and Joyous Wolf. We had a great time, and we still got a chance to come rock with us here in the States. We've still got a few dates before we head to Europe in July. Starting this weekend, April 19th, we're playing the Buddha Rock Club in Fort Myers, Florida. That show is almost sold out. If there's even any tickets left, go get your tickets now at FozzyRock.com. April 20th at the Amalie Arena at 98 Rock Fest in Tampa. We made it into the arena. Last few years ago, we played it, and we were out in the parking lot as the pre-show. Now we are kicking off the show in the Amalie Arena. That's also sold out or close to it in Tampa. April 21st, we're doing the WJRR Earth Day birthday at the Central Florida Fairground in Orlando, Florida. Go check out. I think we're on it about 3:30 there. April 22nd, we're playing the WYBB 98 Rock Fest in Charleston, South Carolina. We got a 98 Rock Fest on Friday in Tampa. We got a 98 Rock Fest on Sunday in Charleston. Get all your tickets for those shows at FozzyRock.com. There's a whole bunch more in July. I know we're doing Peoria and a bunch of places like that. We'll get to those. They're all on FozzyRock.com. And also, don't forget the Words of Jericho tour back to the UK in the spring, May 21st in Glasgow, May 22nd in Manchester, May 23rd in London. All those shows are sold out, but there are standing room only tickets available in Glasgow and London. You're not going to want to miss these shows. We have a blast. Get your tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. And of course, we need you to go book your cabin on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. For as little as $150, you can reserve your cabin, but you got to hurry because those cabins are running out at Chris Jericho Cruise. And remember, once you book your cabin, we leave October 27th from Miami. Everything that's on the cruise is all-inclusive. Concerts, comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greets, autograph signings, the Sea of Honor tournament includes your food as well. You'll be able to hang out with everybody including me. I'll be doing a Words of Jericho show exclusively, 3 Fozzie shows, a bunch of live podcasts. We're going to do Talk is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Talk is Jericho with Conan and Rey Mysterio talking about the life and times of Eddie Guerrero. We're going to do a live Keep It at 100 versus Killing the Town. Lots of great stuff coming up. I might even do something with the Bullet Club talking about All In, which I think will be huge with Cody and the Young Bucks talking the whole story about that. So there's going to be lots of live podcasts. Plus, Jim Ross will be doing. I'm going to have Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler on as well. That's another one. SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Noel Foley, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Keeping It 100, Conan Disco, and Shane Helms. Beyond the Darkness, Tim Dennis and Dave Schrader will be scaring the pants off you with some scary tales. Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show. That's hilarious. Don Callis and Paul Lazenby doing Killing the Town. Brad Williams, Ron Funches is making you laugh. Busted Open Radio with Dave LaGreca. Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour is going to be performing. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons. Fozzie is going to be doing 3 sets. King, along with The Stir from Atlanta, Georgia. The Dave Spivak Project. Go check out his new video for Get Out of My House on YouTube now. The Cherry Bombs, the Darlings of Rock and Roll. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best AC/DC cover band. They're female. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Aussie cover band, they're male. And of course, Ring of Honor presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be there. Young Bucks, the villain Marty Scurll, Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Cheeseburger, Deonna Purrazzo, Mandy Leon, Kelly Klein, Brandy Rhodes, Matt Taven, Flip Gordon, Delirious, Kenny King, Silas Young, the Beer City Bruiser, the Dogs are going to be there. And of course, the American Nightmare, Cody, don't call him Rhodes, is going to be there as well. Everybody's going to be on this cruise. And the thing is, we've still got 1, 2, 3, 4 more announcements. This cruise is just ridiculous, man. We're gonna need a bigger boat. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and reserve your cabin as soon as you can. We are going to sell out, and this is not some kind of promotional tactic. Some of the levels of cabins are already selling out, and the rest are soon to follow very, very quickly. So ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And coming up Friday, Talk is Jericho in the UK continues with former Iron Maiden singer Blaze Bailey. He'll be here talking all about how he got into Iron Maiden, how he got out of Iron Maiden, all the solo work that he's doing now. He's a great guy. I can understand why Maiden brought him on to be the lead singer after Bruce Dickinson quit back in 1993. Lots of good stuff happening. In the meantime and in between time, stay hungry, stay hard, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy, matey.